The other thing too is like, it's, you know, sometimes it's you know, I guess you need a visit from Captain Obvious, right? One of the simplest things to do is to just simply answer questions that you have heard that you know people are asking. There's this guy who actually sells pools in central Virginia, Richmond, Virginia area. And, you know, just probably every community in North America has somebody who sells pools, right? Or at least, you know, several of those, right? And, yeah, so, you know, the guy sells pools. It's kind of boring, right? I mean, it's how interesting can you really get about that? But what this guy actually started to find out, and his business was not doing so great, but what he actually started to discover is that if you want to do research about pools online, it was almost impossible to get information. Because everyone who sold pools would give really vague answers to questions.
I'll be honest with you. Some of you read some of my blog posts might have seen that and be like, Artie has posts that are longer than 1,000 words. Yes, I do. I'll be the first to say I do. But this is what I aim for. You really want to try to keep it shorter because people have short attention spans. When it comes to visual presentations of any type, who knows how many seconds you have before you lose the audience's attention? 5 seconds? You're in the right range. About 5 to 10 seconds, you've lost it if you haven't grabbed them in that. It used to be about 60 seconds. Twitter has done wonders for our attention span. So.
Oh, and just a quick note on the first bullet point. I think generally speaking that is true, but occasionally there is room for longer posts.
Exactly.
If all of your posts are 2,000 words, that's not necessarily good. But occasionally there are certain subjects that demand a little bit more attention, and they actually find that when you put those into the mix along with some shorter posts, they actually can perform really well. So there is definitely still a place for those longer articles from time to time.
Yep. You just want to keep it varied in there, just like Vince was saying, and that'll help with the accessibility. Eye-catching headlines with cross-spectrum appeal. All right? You want to make people to click. So an example here from our blog, why the Big Bang Theory became pro-life. Who here would click on that? All right.
It's who did click on that?
Who did click on that? Yay! You read one of our posts. Exciting.
Yeah.
And so you're not required to, but, you know. It was actually one of the most popular posts in the last 5 months. A lot of people clicked on it. A lot of people shared it. Why? Because the Big Bang Theory. Guess what? People know what it is. It's one of the most popular television shows on television. And on top of that, it's not something you would think of being pro-life. So it's unexpected, remember? And there's a story in it, because it's a story when you click on it. So all these different models, they actually work. Buyer beware, this action could double the risk of premature birth. That was another very popular post on our blog. What does that headline leave you asking? What is it? What's the action? Now, unlike a lot of Huffington Post headlines, though, this at least gives us the subject. We're dealing with premature birth. I hate those headlines, and I would encourage you to stay away from the headlines that leave all the subject matter completely ambiguous. Warning, this could make something really bad. What, you know, yeah.
This could make something horrible happen to you.
Yeah, it's like, well, what is it, and what's the horrible thing? So now I'm wanting both answers, so yeah. Just give them one question that needs an answer. It's a general rule of thumb. And solve one problem at a time. This is something Vince has helped me a lot with. Rome was not built in a day. Roe v. Wade will not be overturned in a single blog post. All right? So something important to remember. Don't try to bite all the apple. Take one bite at the apple. All right? And then publish consistently. If you're not consistently putting content on your site, you're not going to be giving them a consistent reason to come back. So try to follow a schedule. Publish when your audience is active. On Facebook, there's an insights tool right there as part of your page that'll show you when your fans are online. Good news. Fans are online pretty much 24/7 now. So there's not a lot of fluctuation here, but it's still important to check that and just see when you see your peak periods. Publish when the story is current, all right? So if it's an ongoing story, publish on it. If it hasn't been a news story about it or some conversation going on in the last year, don't talk about it, all right? Because it's not going to go as, or at least reconsider talking about it, I should say, because it's probably not going to have the same effect. Promote your posts through social media channels, And you can consider also adding click-to-tweet lines. We do this sometimes. Sometimes we don't. But you can embed in your blog posts where they can just click and it automatically tweets out a tweet about that post. If readers are not subscribing to your blog, if they're not sharing your blog, if they're not talking about it on social media, then it means you're not addressing their need. And that's kind of the bummer for us as marketers, because we love what we do. It's our baby. We want everyone to like it, but sometimes they don't. And that's where we learn and have to ask ourselves why. And this really cool pool was because of that pool story Vince told you. So right there, that's the kind of pool that that man now can afford to put in his backyard because he went to inbound marketing from a megaphone. And I think, perfect. Perfect place to take a break.
Yeah, let's do that. Why don't we take it's 2:20. So why don't we just take a 10-minute break and we'll resume at 2:30.
And we'll jump into social media. Oh, hold on tight. It'll be lots of fun. So, growing up as a pastor's kid and always talking a lot, it became apparent that I love to talk and I love to persuade people to do things. So it was either become a used car salesman or a marketer. And so I decided, you know, I could do the marketing thing. But I might well sell you my car, and it is used if you'd like it. 2009 Toyota Camry, white. Beautiful year, and it's been gently loved in by my 16-month-old baby, so it's perfect for you. Pro-abundant life inside and out. All right, I think we're going to go ahead and get started. Social media, wonderful phrase. And to introduce social media to us, I brought in a video by one of the greatest experts of social media around. Vince, would you please click play on that?
Instead of mailing everyone my vacation photos, I'm saving a ton of time by posting them to my wall.
Ooh, I like that one.
It's so quick. It's just like my car insurance. I save 15% in just 15 minutes.
I save more than that in half the time.
I unfriend you.
That's not how it works. That's not how any of this works.
15 minutes for a quote isn't how it works anymore. With eSurance, 7.5 minutes could save you on car insurance. Welcome to the modern world. eSurance, backed by Allstate. Click or call.
I love Beatrice. Like I said, one of the greatest experts of social media around, so want to bring her in. Anyone here seen that ad? Very successful marketing campaign as well. And it's fun because I think it captures a lot of what's happened in this world that's been transformed by the prevalence of social media. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn, Pinterest, and I put that et cetera because it's constantly changing. Pokemon Go, anyone? Haha, yes. How I wish that 3 months ago I would have invested in Nintendo. Their stock doubled within a week of the launch of that program. And by the way, just to tell you how fast the market changes, Twitter, which has been around now, for a long time, with its millions of users, was surpassed in active users and accounts by Pokemon Go within 12 days of its launch. Think about that. So if you're at Twitter and you're the CEO of marketing of Twitter, you're having a very bad day because you were just beaten by an app that was out for 12 days. All right? Now, of course, this is a very volatile market, so it remains to be seen where Pokemon Go is in 10 years. That's why I put that little et cetera there. It's kind of all included there. Nearly two-thirds of American adults, 65%, use social networking sites. This is up from 7% when Pew Research Centers began systematically tracking usage in 2005. Think about that. Nearly two-thirds. How many times do you think the average person under the age of 30, I think it was under the age of 30, it might have been just average person, it just came out, the stat this week, I saw it when I was in line at the grocery store. Average person touches their smartphone in a day. Take a guess. What's that? 300 and something. Someone else? 700. 500. Anyone else? You're all very off. 1,000. 2,400 times in a day they will touch their smartphone. That was my reaction. It's like, man, that's right, 2,400 times. Young adults ages 18 to 29 are most likely to use social media, a full 90% do. What age range are the average abortion-minded clients? If we're not in this river, if we're not paddling our pro-abundant life boat and this river, we are not going to be effective. Because the age that is making those pregnancy decisions is using social media to an incredible extent. It's also not just, in fact, 35% of those 65 and older report using social media. That's compared to 2% in 2005. Think about that for a moment.
Those are your donors.
So if you're not in this stream, you're losing 35% of all the potential donors that are out there in your community. So social media needs to become a big part of what you do, because that's where the conversations are happening. And again, inbound marketing, we go where the conversation is. It saves us time, energy, and resources. Facebook age demographics, according to jetscram.com, fun name there, based on 2014, these were the latest global statistics I was able to get in time for this. So 13 to 17, of course, these numbers are going to be even higher. So just see this as a baseline. 13 to 17, 5.4%, 9.8 million. 18 to 24, 42 million. 25 to 34, 44 million. 35 to 54, 56 million. 55 and up, 28 million. So take a look at this middle bracket right here. 18 to 24 and 25 to 34. Again, those are your abortion-minded clients. 35 to 54 and 55 and older, they're your donors. There's your volunteers. There's your potential directors and members of the who are working there in the pregnancy center, giving their time and energy and resources. So these are the people you're going to be targeting. Facebook has pushed aside traditional news sites like CNN. Do you know that millennials do not get their news the way their parents did? Here's a hint. If you think a millennial gets home from college, sits down, and turns on the TV to watch CNN, you're sorely mistaken. And it makes me laugh, because whenever I turn on CNN, it's like they still act like their audience is my age. It makes me laugh. I kind of chuckle at it, because I kind of, you know, they're trying. But that's not where people my age are getting their news. They're getting it on social media and social resources. Anyone here heard of something called the skim? Anyone heard of the skim? S-K-I-M-M. The skim is the fastest growing millennial-minded news source in the country right now. Millions of active users. It's a free email subscription that you can sign up for. And it's news by millennials for millennials. I will tell you right now, it is extremely left-leaning. So you're not going to see a site that's going to talk positively about the work that we do in the pro-abundant life movement. But if you want to know what millennials are thinking, it's a great resource. The skim. It's also, or not thinking, exactly. I will also tell you that it's the kind of news source where you're going to see constant references to things that millennials think about and using it to talk about the news. So the other day when they were talking about Hermine, the hurricane, they talked, that name sounds like a famous character millennials grew up with. And you're nodding your head, Hermione from the Harry Potter series. So the headline literally said Oxio Umbrella, which was the command to draw something in the Harry Potter books. All right, so the skim. An October 2014 analysis claimed that Facebook drove nearly 25% of all traffic to websites. Think about that. I will tell you that number is even higher now. Justin Smith, the CEO of Bloomberg Media, one of the biggest media conglomerates in the world. Do you have a question? I'm sorry. Sure, go right ahead. Exactly.
So if you can find them and you can have a conversation, like an actual dialogue with them and like teach them how to not argue, then you'll find them and their friends, some sort of like Turning Point USA, Americans for Prosperity, and all those fun groups.
Yes.
And we're out there. There's a ton of us.
There are.
We just don't know how to connect with each other and connect with mentors, basically, and other people who can like help us get started. And
Thank you for mentioning that. And I'll also say, if you look at the statistics and the studies on the millennial mind, I will tell you, one of the things that registers extremely high for millennials is justice and injustice. All right? This is why when they studied millennial responses to the Cecil the Lion and the CMP video campaigns, you guys remember those stories? They happened at the same time. So as a refresher,
the CMP is the Center for Medical Progress. They did the Planned Parenthood
undercover videos. Those expose videos. Any of you see something on the news about that? All right. So undercover investigators went into Planned Parenthood clinics and met with directors and things like that, where you heard them just casually over dinner talking about ripping apart babies and selling the parts and exchanging the parts and all this other stuff. Horrible stuff. At the same time, you had Cecil the Lion, this lion in Africa that was shot by an American who was going over there on a hunting trip. All right. Here's the fascinating thing. Millennials, overwhelmingly, when they were polled, showed care and passion about both stories. Why this is fascinating is their parents didn't. By and large, their parents fell along typical ideological conservative liberal lines on those stories. So if you were a conservative, you cared about the Planned Parenthood story, but you didn't really care about a lion getting shot in Africa. And if you were liberal, you didn't really care about the Planned Parenthood story, but you cared about the lion story. That didn't happen with the millennial, because the millennial mind saw, those who did the study argued, they saw a similar story in each case, where a defenseless creature, in the Planned Parenthood videos, an unborn child, or a lion in Africa, was being violated. This is where, as marketers, you can latch into that latent desire in the millennial mind to see injustice corrected. I truly believe my generation could be the generation that gets Roe v. Wade overturned. And I think if it happens, it's going to be because people have tapped into that desire to see wrongs righted. Yes.
So many of us are like, I want to change the world, but we think we can, and we're not like, oh, well, it's all lost and white.
Uh-huh.
I think that's a big thing. Like, I know with my parents, when I talk to them, they're like, oh, that's cute. And I'm like, no. You don't understand. Like,
this is doable. Yeah.
And they're like, okay, honey, like, go back and play with your toys. And so a lot of us are like, no, we're going to change things as quick as we can. So if you can tap into the motivation and the
so that right there is a great plug for attending the Millennium Forum later this week as well, where you're going to be hearing all about these ideas and communicating with the millennial mind. CEO of Bloomberg Media, he said, quote, the list is a lot longer than is publicly known of those that have Facebook delivering half to two-thirds of their traffic right now.
I think ours is around, what, 15% maybe of our traffic?
Depends on where you're at on our site and stuff and what you're looking at.
Yeah.
So Facebook and social media drives a lot of traffic, and it also can drive that traffic very cheaply and affordably. So, again, this is why you want to be here. How often should you post on Facebook? So we're first going to talk about Facebook, first social media channel. How often should you post? At least once per day? Up to three times per day. All right? There's no need to make this a running catalog of every single thing that happens. Some people try to turn their Facebook pages into their Twitter feed. I'm doing this now. I'm doing that now. I'm doing that now. You don't need to do that. Like I said, once per day is fine. It's a good starting point. If you want to, up to three times per day. Anything more than that, generally you'll see in the studies that have been done, drops off how much engagement you're actually getting. So keep that in mind. What should you post? Original and shared content. Good news. When you're posting on Facebook, you don't have to create it all. You can actually take any story and provide a 1-to-2 sentence response to it when you share it. And that response can drive even more shares. So this is the way, remember we talked about Trojan horse earlier? Get your idea to go on another story. Take a story, provide a quick 1-to-2 sentence commentary on it, and suddenly everyone's talking about that story with your commentary along for the ride. All right? Anyone have a question about that? Multi-format, yes. No, both, both and. And so,
have there been studies in terms of reaction that way?
That's actually an interesting question. One of the things that the book, whose title we still can't remember,
it's invisible.
Yeah, the steps book, the Jonah Berger book, where he has a steps model. One of the biggest principles that he talks about in that book is the notion of high arousal emotions.
Mm-hmm.
And so on this kind of this idea of tapping into people's emotions, it's actually very specific emotions that you want to tap into, and those are the ones that actually motivate people to take action. Mm-hmm. And so the ones that he talks about, the couple of examples are anger is actually a high arousal emotion. So when people are angry, they take action. When people are in awe, they take action. But when people are sad, so if you actually share a story that makes people sad, that's a powerful emotion, but it's not an emotion that people act on.
Mm-hmm.
When you become sad about something, you actually just kind of don't want to do it. And even
curl
contentment,
up.
Also a nice emotion that we like to feel, but contentment doesn't actually make us do anything. So there's actually he lists out these high arousal emotions that you want to try to tap into. So to your question, it's a good story about something you agree with, don't agree with, but try to tap into one of those emotions in your readers. So if it's something that's like some really crazy thing that, you know, some abortionist did or something like that, you can tap into the anger. Say, you know, this is why we need laws protecting women's health at abortion clinics or something like this, because, you know, blah, blah, blah. So people are going to get angry and share that. Or, you know, some of the stories that we share around babies, you know, surviving abortion and then going on to become, Olympic athletes or, you know, whatever. So people are in awe of, like, oh my gosh, that's amazing, and then they want to share that. So that's the sort. So those are the sorts of emotions
mm-hmm.
that tap into. Positive, they're positive and negative emotions that are on that scale.
And when you think about that, I maybe it's because it's the pastor kid in me, but I see all of that in what God himself did through his son Jesus Christ in his parables. Those stories present and arouse emotions that are going to motivate action. A great example of this in the Old Testament, I think, is when Nathan the prophet goes to King David to confront him over his sin with Bathsheba. And Nathan doesn't just go in there and say, hey, you murdered someone, you committed adultery, did all these things. No, what does he do? He tells them a story. And what emotion is he trying to drive with that story? Anger over injustice. And so David's sitting there going, this guy should lose everything. He should have four times what was taken from him, all this stuff. And then Nathan simply says, you are the man. And the scales come off. Arouse emotion. And specifically, as Vince was saying, those emotions that are going to get the action to happen. Engagement. This is how we're going to measure success on Facebook. Clicks, comments, reactions, like, angry, laugh. Facebook introduced all these new ways to react to things because, you know, it kind of felt weird when someone said, please pray for me, my dog died, and you liked it. I mean, you know. I mean, anyone else feel weird about that? I'm a millennial, and I still feel weird. Like, I'm liking that your dog died. Not like that, but liking the other. Yeah. So they've added these other things. I will tell you, most people still just do the like. We're creatures of habit, so I don't see a lot of reactions on the other ones, but those are ways you can measure reach, how many people saw. So when you see in Facebook Ad Manager, and we'll be talking a lot about this, when you see the word reach, that's how many people see your post, all right? I will tell you right now, if you've done marketing for years and years and you're used to print media, you're going to be paying a lot less to get your ad in front of an audience than you are in any other channel. I mean, to get your ad in front of 90,000 magazine subscribers, you're going to be spending hundreds, if not a couple thousand dollars, most likely. Doing that in Facebook, a lot easier. New fans for your page?
Contagious. That's the name of the book.
That's it.
Gosh. Yeah. Contagious by Jonah Berger. That's
the story. There we go.
Where the steps model comes from.
And, all right, so this is the number. We had it in there. So 39%. Based on our most recent HubSpot data, was coming through Facebook.
Wow.
On CareNet's page.
This month so far, but
yeah.
It's only 4 days.
Because we're only, 5 days in. So overall, in 1 month, 39% came in through Facebook. So needless to say, that's important to us. What we do on Facebook is mattering to us. So measuring success. Ways to boost your impact.
Page,
What I mean is we took something on our page, most likely a blog post, because that's the most common way this is happening. We shared it on our Facebook page. We may have boosted that through Facebook advertising. Someone else shared it. Whenever someone clicked on that post, it's embedded with a link directly to our website. So they're going directly to our site through that. So they're not having to type in www.care-net.org to see our page. Though, I will say, what we have noticed is the more we focused on Facebook advertising and boosting that interaction through social media, guess what else we've seen increase? Manually entered URLs. People are now coming themselves, typing in our website, and that's increasing as our Facebook has increased. So this doesn't mean you're ignoring organic traffic. What it means is you're finding more people that are going to want to come organically to your site. Does that make sense? Yes, question.
Yep.
I would say yes. Either two Facebook pages, one dedicated more for your donor audience, and then one dedicated for your client audience, or keeping it to clients. Because the reality is, client-facing messaging is very different than donor-facing messaging. What I spend most of my time, and what Vince spends most of his time writing for our website at CareNet, is donor-facing messaging. It's messaging to get people excited about the Abundant Life movement. All right? Those articles are not necessarily going to cause a person who's in the middle of facing a pregnancy decision to make a decision to go to a pregnancy center. It's a different message. So having multiple channels, and that's why I mentioned multiple blog channels, can be important. Now, if you do multiple blog channels, if you have a donor blog, for example, and a client-facing blog, don't link to them both on your main web page. So when someone's searching for your center and you're doing AdWord campaigns or whatever else to drive traffic to your center page, don't link to your donor blog where people are going to be like, oh no, this is a bunch of right-wing crazy people. They're going to try to force me to do something I don't want to do. You don't want that to happen. So have it on a separate site, maybe a separate URL, things like that, to try to divide that traffic. All right. Small amounts of investment can result in huge increases in engagement. Here's just some experiences we've seen in the 5 months I've been working there. We've seen costs as low as $1.20 per 1,000 impressions. So an impression is someone seeing the ad. They're scrolling through their Facebook feed. By the way, you'll find that on average, I think it's 70% of users of Facebook are doing it through mobile. So if your website that you're linking to is not optimized for mobile devices, iPhones, Samsung Galaxies, you're going to be missing out. All right? So 70% are mobile. We've seen 1,000 impressions for as low as $1.20 per 1,000 impressions, which is unbelievable in the world of nonprofit advertising. So Facebook is where you want to spend your money. Banner ads, I think the price I saw was $7 per 1,000, and that was being considered a good offer that we were getting from a marketing agent who called us and said, hey, Artie, CareNet should be advertising with us. We can give you $7 per 1,000 impressions. And I said, okay, we're getting $1.20. Goodbye. So, yeah, you want to go on social media. Facebook ads, videos, autoplay, increasing visibility and engagement. Have you noticed when you're scrolling through your Facebook feed on your phone, the video automatically starts playing? You don't even have to click play. Now, what happens with the autoplay? It's muted, right? How many of you have a video on Facebook right now? Anyone here have a video on your Facebook page? Good hands. How many of you who have videos on Facebook pages have subtitles for those videos? We didn't either. And we now do. Every video that's going on our Facebook page now is getting subtitles on it. Why? Because when you're scrolling through the Facebook feed and the autoplay is engaged with all videos, it's automatically going to start playing, there's no audio. So how's someone going to want to start listening? Remember, you don't have much to grab their attention. Because they're going to see the text, those subtitles on the bottom. Facebook also, as well as, I know YouTube, and I believe Facebook does this too, Facebook and YouTube incentivize videos and give higher preference to videos that are enabled for closed captioning for the hearing impaired. SEO, search engine optimization. Did you know that when Google does a search, it includes videos. And if there are subtitles that you've created for the video, it's going to scrub those subtitle text for keywords people are searching for. So if you want your video to appear higher on a search engine result page, put subtitles in it. And guess what? You don't need expensive software to do this. If you open up your YouTube video in your video manager, you can create subtitles right there for it. Now, some of you will notice that YouTube has automatic generation of subtitles. Has anyone ever tried that? It's hilarious. Watch one of your videos with YouTube's auto-generated subtitles. The funniest things are coming out of the person's mouth. It can be really awkward and hilarious at the same time. So don't rely on auto-generated subtitles. It is an imperfect science. All right? Yes. Exactly.
A lot of times I'll be on campus, crammed in next to people, right before class. I'm this video looks good, but I don't want the 20 people around me to be like,
mm-hmm. Yep.
So if people are if you're in the bathroom,
mm-hmm. Yep.
You want videos.
Yep. And so subtitles, you're going to address so many different needs, and you're taking the same video and making it much more effective just by adding those subtitles. When you do a Facebook ad, the image of the ad, text cannot make up more than 20% of this image. Millennials love memes. This means a Facebook ad cannot be one of those cool memes where you take the picture of, Nicolas Cage and then they put the big text underneath. That doesn't work, I'm afraid. Because it cannot take up more than 20% of the ad. Facebook will not approve the ad. So, yeah, little sad face there. No memes, I'm afraid. Other guidelines. Ads must describe your service or product, not the user. And I'm going to say right now, this is fuzzy science. Everyone know what I mean when I say fuzzy? So it's really hard to define this. It's very squishy. Those are another great term for this. Here are examples that have not worked for us when we've done ads. And we actually just changed. Anyone here who's downloaded our BYD social, we've sent you an updated email with the updated language because we've had to change our own advertising guidelines that we had as a resource on our store because of the new Facebook ad policies. So this ad, pregnant, know your options, is oftentimes not approved by Facebook. It is not because Facebook is against pregnancy centers. That's not why. Trust me, they want your money as much as anyone else's. The reason is because it's describing the user, not the service. So if your ad is talking about the user, 9 times out of 10 it will fail. Now, I've seen examples of this where it's passed. And I don't know why. That's why it's squishy. So if you want to be sure to get your ad approved by Facebook's ad monitors, just describe your service. Vince, were you about to say something? Okay. All right. So that's just something to keep in mind. So you can say, learn the facts about pregnancy decisions at such and such pregnancy, pregnancy place. And then in your image, you can show a person who's thinking or confused or trying to research, whatever. You can use your images to help add to that messaging. Just make sure the thrust of your ad is describing what you're going to do for the user. So, hungry, eat a Snickers. That's not really describing Snickers, but you can say Snickers fixes hunger better than any candy bar, and that does describe the product. Does that make sense? That distinction? All right, choose your placements wisely. So placement is where the ad is going to appear. Instagram, audience network, desktop right column, desktop newsfeed, and mobile newsfeed are the placement options when you place your ads. I'll tell you right now the ones that I choose to ignore. This is something you can choose to do or you can do with something completely different. For me, what I have found that has worked well is to avoid the right column because those are on the right side of the page on a desktop browser. And I can tell you right now from my own personal experience, I never look at anything over there. So I'm not going to pay to put my ad there. Instagram. Instagram has worked for some nonprofits. Pregnancy centers, I think it's a harder one to break into. So I personally leave out Instagram ads. I do desktop newsfeed and mobile newsfeed because that means someone's scrolling through their newsfeed, seeing the stories, and the ad appears because that's where I have found we get the most engagement is by going there. Set a duration for your ad and include a compelling call to action. So when you embed your ad in Facebook, it can link directly to your page, and you can say, learn more. You can say, schedule your appointment today. You can say, talk with a coach today. You want that compelling call to action that's going to drive them to do something. And then once the duration of the ad has run, you can go back in and see what it looks like. And we actually can show you, probably be a good place to show you what the ad manager looks like. So I'm just going to come over here and try to be Steve Jobs for a second, you know, and do the side thing he does. So we're gonna go to the Facebook ad manager. We'll show you an example ad so you can see what this looks like. And anyone with a Facebook account can open a Facebook ad manager account completely for free. Because, like I said, Facebook loves to take your money. And they will actually optimize your ads to get the lowest return, I'm sorry, the highest return on the investment possible.
How do we get,
we're just going to drag it over. There we go.
Oh, look at that.
Look at that. So, here you can see different ad campaigns. So here's my main window here. And I can see different active campaigns, not delivering. So I'm going to go into an active campaign here. So I'm showing you under the hood of some stuff we've been doing at CareNet here. So you guys are, you know, in the know. All right. And I'm going to come down here to Hillary Clinton. You can name this anything you want. It's internal. No one sees the names but you and your organization, whoever's managing that. So here, it's a recently completed ad. There's a little picture of what the ad image looked like. All right. This was for a Facebook post that we did sharing one of our blog posts regarding Hillary Clinton and what she said about personhood. So talking about that issue. Here you can see the delivery. It's not delivering. I can just click right here and change that and make it delivering again. It's run its course, but I decide I want to do it again. You can see the cost of what you paid per engagement. All right, the average cost per engagement for a Facebook post for a nonprofit nationally is about 22 cents per engagement. We hit a cent on this post. So this was one of our better posts. We were really excited when this happened. You can see the amount that we spent on the ad. So we spent $85 on that ad. You can see the results here. We had 8,347 engagements. That's likes, comments, shares, the whole kit and caboodle. It reached 63,000 people. That's how many saw it. And this is its relevancy score. This is a 10. That is the highest score you can get. So 1 to 10 tells you how relevant it is for your audience. All right. So your goal as you're optimizing your ad is to try to get it to 10. The closer you are to 10, the better it's performing. Is that making sense? So right here in this window, I can take this ad. I can change anything I want about it. So let's just go in here to edit ad. I can go in here. And we could do a whole workshop on this. I'm just going to speed through just to give you a little introduction. But you can see the ad. Here's the you clicked on that, it would go straight to our blog. So here's the title of the blog post, Abortion, Where Even Democrats Part Ways with Hillary Clinton. Here's the meta description. And Vince will tell you his meta description comment.
Oh, I never met a description I didn't like.
Thank you, Vince.
I say it every time.
So the meta description is that little byline on the bottom, that little section, gives you a little more info. So even 21 million Democrats believe Hillary's position is too radical. And here is where we get to provide, as we shared on Facebook, a little extra commentary. As you can see, we were very verbose in that commentary. Unbelievable. Dot, dot, dot. That was it. So there's the post. That's what it would look like on a desktop. This is what it would look like on mobile. You'll notice that the meta description is always taken out of mobile because of space. So that's just the way it always works. And you can actually test this on anything you want. And so if you go up here, you can say ad set, targeting, placement, etc. And here you can adjust, and you'll see lifetime budget. You can see the starting, running it all the time. If you want to run it at specific times of day, when you find that your people are, you know, active, you can choose that and set that. So all of these parameters can be set. And here's the audience. Now, this audience we have found has worked very well for us. That doesn't mean it would necessarily work for you. You got to find the audience. This is a national audience, so chances are for your pregnancy center, you wouldn't necessarily want to use this as your audience. But here are all the parameters that we use for that, and we've just called it our hardcore group. The potential reach is 9.9 million people. That's how many people match this. Now, here's where Facebook advertising gets really cool. How many of you have an email contact list of donors who've donated to you at any time at your center? Yes, good. You all should have that, because when you get to emails, you need that to get your development stuff out there. Did you know you can target your Facebook ads to the user accounts associated with those email addresses? Let me say that again. You can put a Facebook ad only on the screens of the people who've donated to you at any time in the past using their email address. This is where it starts to get a little creepy, but it's really cool. So
you could take your email list, right, and you actually upload it into Facebook, and then Facebook matches those email addresses with Facebook accounts that were created, you know, with those email addresses, and it creates a group for you, a list for you in Facebook. So now you have your donor list in Facebook, so you can actually target ads to them in Facebook.
Does it then analyze that list and then broaden it?
You could do a
lookalike list.
They're called lookalike. So you could create another list in Facebook that has characteristics similar to the list that was created from your donor list. Yeah.
And you can specify how similar. So, like, if you want it as similar as possible, it'll be a smaller list, but it'll be bigger than your initial one. It's called a lookalike list. Now, one thing I'll tell you, you see this here, broad, specific, little range there? If you're too broad, you'll see it'll be yellow there. It'll generally not perform necessarily as well. And if you're too specific, it'll generally be costly. Because what happens with online social media advertising is they're bidding for you. The software will automatically bid to take your ad, and it knows that each day, so let's say I'm running for 7 days and I say $70 total budget. That means every day it's going to try to spend no more than $10, right? So the more people I have that it can send that ad to, the more cheap placement biddings it has. Does that make sense? So the smaller the list, generally the higher the cost will be. But on the flip side, the more targeted the list, ideally, the more interaction you're going to get. Because if these are donors, or they're people that have identified who raised their hand, they should perform better and engage more than the general public. Does that make sense? Yes.
It's just going to show up in their newsfeed.
The ad will only go to their newsfeed. Now, they could share it on their page, and it could go viral. That is true, which would be pretty cool, actually. But, you know, the worst thing that happens in your job is something goes viral. That's awesome. Just going to say right there. But that's a great bar. But it is private in the sense it's just going to them. And I'll also stress here, you do not need to worry about violating the privacy of your donors. Facebook does not keep these email addresses. Once it's a double-blind system. Once the emails have been matched to accounts, email addresses are completely scrubbed from the system. Facebook keeps no record of that. All you get is a list. In fact, you don't even get to see the names of the people. Like I said, it's double-blind who are in that list. You just know, Facebook will just tell you, you gave me 10,000 emails, of which 2,500 had Facebook accounts. Those 2,500 are in this list, but you can't specify and say, I want to see this person or that person. Does that make sense?
And they don't have to have our page already.
Nope. In fact, when you create the list, you can say, I want to exclude those who are already fans of our page. Because they're going to see our stuff anyway. See, this is what's so beautiful. Like I said, we could spend a whole four-hour workshop probably just on Facebook. We don't have that time. And you want to get dinner. So this is probably all I'm going to show you under the hood, so to speak, but hopefully it's whet your appetite. And I have my business card, and we'll be handing those out. Vince has his here, but, you know, contact me if you guys have any questions about this. You're doing an ad campaign. I've talked with several centers that were running into issues with the whole pregnant question mark ads getting failed, and they were worried that, you know, this was like a vendetta by Facebook against pregnancy centers. And so I was able to help them through rewording and reworking those ads so that they would be more effective. So I'll go ahead and close this window out. Yes.
Do
Yes. Yes. And we're going to be talking about email addresses a little bit later, too. Email acquisition is a topic in and of itself, and we'll be talking a little bit about that, but yeah. But it's important to helping in your marketing efforts.
And you know, the imperfect workarounds are not, if you want to reach them on Facebook but you don't have your email address, well, I mean, I suppose for one thing you can search them by name on Facebook. I don't know if that's gonna help though, because then you would just know, yeah, you wouldn't be able to target. But what we've done actually, in order to target certain groups like pastors, for example, or church leaders, is actually when you go in to create a list of people that you want to target advertising to, you can actually get really, really specific and say, I only want to target people who live in this town and whose job, title, or employer is church or pastor, et cetera, et cetera. So you can actually kind of finagle it so that you're essentially creating a list of, you know, pastors in Tulsa, Oklahoma, or you know what I mean? So you might not get everyone, and you might get people who call themselves pastors and aren't actually pastors. I don't know who would do that.
But why would you do that to yourself?
But you could probably kind of sort of get around that, and then you could start, you know, putting Facebook messages out to that list and kind of see what happens.
Yeah, and that's, you know, when we did the Making Life Disciples, we targeted people who were associated with or liked, and we named all these major denominations and major Christian leaders, and then said pastor, youth pastor, children's, whatever, to target members or leaders within those churches. And it worked well. So those are ways you can work around that and get, when you don't have email addresses, to make those ads effective. When you really get into the nuts and bolts of the targeting specificity of Facebook, it kind of is a little creepy. When I was in the higher education and missions world, we were being encouraged to use Facebook as a means of finding out how many potential students were in an area. Because we could go in Facebook without even creating an ad and say, I want to see 18 to 26-year-olds in this zip code whose affiliation religiously is Christian and who are interested in these subjects. And it would tell me how many potential Facebook individuals were in that area. And you can see all of that. That's why Facebook is free. Facebook makes billions of dollars a year. It's not because they're charging you to use it. They want as many free users as they can get because they're data mining to do the advertising. YouTube. Who here has a YouTube channel? Excellent. All right. Upload videos that would be interest too. And this is where we're getting back to that YouTube channel question. Start with your client facing because you're a pregnancy center. But then try to create a YouTube channel for donors because the messaging is going to be different. Create captions for your videos that would, as we said, increase SEO and engagement. And monitor the engagement you're receiving with the videos. While you're at that, just as a little plug, you can, shall we say, thumbs down videos in your community by organizations that are carrying a message that you truly don't like. That's what the social media interaction is for. So a little shameless plug, NAROL attempted to create a viral video campaign called Comedians in Cars Getting Abortions. We did a blog post on this. Who here has seen that video? Disturbing, isn't it? All right. What was wonderful to me as a marketer was the fact that when I went to the comment section, not only were there a lot of negative comments on the video, there were 4 thumbs down for every thumbs up the video got. And just so you know, that's not just something that's helpful in the sense of, oh, you feel good about it because people don't like it. It actually means that NAROL was losing SEO because people were not popular with the video. All right? Now, I'm not suggesting you go black hat, as the term in marketing, and call up all your donors and say, we're going to do an anti-video NAROL campaign. We're all going to go on and we're all going to thumbs down. You don't need to do that. But do monitor the engagement you're receiving on your Facebook videos because it will affect how effective those videos are. Does that make sense? Questions on that? So if you're seeing a lot of thumbs down, you know that it's not having the impact you're wanting and not as many people are going to see it. Oh, I actually went backwards. Sorry about that. All right. SEO, search engine optimization. Who here has heard that? Who here feels intimidated by SEO? Good. I appreciate your honesty. I'll be completely honest and transparent with you about this, too. I was intimidated by SEO. It's not actually that scary when you learn more about it. It makes your website appear higher on search results. Just so you guys know, there's over 694,000 searches per second. Think about that for a moment. Let that sink in. 694,000. Who here has ever clicked to page 2 of search results? And I know I mispronounced that. I sound like a choo-choo train there instead of the T. It's been since a kid. But who here has ever clicked to the second page of search results on Google? Wow, you guys are amazing. I always stay on page 1. Page 3. Okay. Kind of drops off after page 2, doesn't it? If your pregnancy center is appearing on page 3, then you've got a problem. Right? If the first thing someone sees when they type in CareNet Pregnancy Center of Wyoming is a bunch of articles about how bad the service is by some op-ed, you have a problem. At the college I worked at, the first thing that came up on the screen when people typed in the name of the college was sexual abuse allegations that were leveled by a left-leaning news magazine several years ago. And the story was multiple years old, but because the college did not invest in SEO, that was the first thing that appeared on the screen when you typed in the college's name. Is that helpful to your marketing efforts? Obviously, no. So this is why it's important. What it takes into consideration. So SEO is all computer-driven. There's no person sitting at Google saying, I'm going to make CareNet appear on page 47. That doesn't really happen. Make a great movie, though. It's all based on computers. So content on your website's the first thing those computers are taking into consideration. When they index your page so it'll appear faster, the search engine bots, all right, so this is just a nice little term for computers that do nothing more than scrub websites to find out what they contain so they can appear in search engine results. Bots scan each page of your website looking for clues about what your website covers. These are in the headline. These are in the tags, in the body, etc. That's what the bots are doing 24/7. So they look at your content. So they see a lot of articles on your website about pregnancy, pregnancy options, pregnancy decisions, abortion. Those bots are going to say, this website is about that. They're not going to say this website is about how to make a sub sandwich. Make sense? All right. Who's linking to you? The more inbound links, this means other organizations who put your link on their page as a resource, the more links you have, the more influence or authority the bots will assign you. Essentially, every link counts as that organization voting for your content. Here's a hint. If it's a small little WordPress blog by a wonderful Christian retiree woman talking about her cats and she links to you, not going to assign a lot of powerful SEO boost to you. But if it's your local newspaper and they link to you because you just did this great press release about how 700 women in a year received help and resources making pregnancy decisions, that's going to boost your SEO. Does that make sense? So authority of the website helps your authority. They're ranked in consideration of your geographic location. So if the searcher is in Wyoming and you're a pregnancy center in Wyoming, you're going to be higher on their search feed than if they're in Florida. Historical performance of the listing. So if you have a bunch of 404 errors, do you guys know what I mean when I say a 404 error? Website, page not found, error, URL not deliverable, etc. Do we like those? No, those are really annoying and frustrating. Search engines hate them. They're going to give you negative marks every time those bots come across a 404 error, which means you're going to appear lower on the search results. Link quality. So how good is this link? Is it reciprocal? Is it one way? Web page content. So keywords, tags, pictures. Did you know when you put a picture on a web page, that picture has a description in the HTML? True story. That description is going to be looked at by SEO. So a description that says baby with her hands open is a good description. A description that says pick number 3, I know we've all seen it and done it, all right? Not so good for SEO. back-end code HTML web page that's going to be looking at that. It's going to be looking at the type of link. Is it a social media link? Is it something from Twitter, Facebook, things like that?